Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome once again. You're with Reverend Harris and Dr. Gene Kennedy. Dr. Gene Kennedy from Atlanta, Georgia, and your very own Reverend Dr. Floyd D. Harris Jr., the West Coast Revolutionary here in Fresno, California. We also like to thank Brother Patch, who is running our board today from Fresno, California. If we can, we would like to mute those phones that need to be muted. We're waiting on Dr. Kennedy to come online. We have had a long weekend, getting ready for another long week ahead of us. That's in store. We know that Minister Farrakhan has went to Washington, D.C., to speak to the nation and the country about the police brutality and the different things that is going on with people all over the country. Again, you're with Real Talk with the number one doctors. That's Reverend Harris and Dr. Gene Kennedy. Dr. Gene Kennedy from Atlanta, Georgia, and Reverend Harris from the West Coast. You know, we are in the middle of a lot of issues that really need to be dialogue about. And I believe that many people do not want to dialogue about what's going on here in America, which I think is unfortunate, because when we read history, we'll see that this country was founded off slavery. And there's been many, many people, indigenous people, Indians, land that was taken away from them, stolen from them. And so, you know, Dr. Kennedy wanted to talk about America's emotional intelligence is really white privilege, part one. We've been trying to get to this for the past 3 days. We're finally able to get on to talk about this topic. And I don't want to take too much time out from her, because I know she's going to need the entire time of the radio show and maybe a part two, part three. We would like for those who go back to the archives to listen to the show. Those who may miss it, we know it's about 6 o'clock over in Atlanta, Georgia, the South. It's 3 o'clock here on the West Coast in Fresno, California. And so we will take no more further time. We'd like to welcome Dr. Gene Kennedy, who will be in Fresno, I believe, this Saturday, here back with us in California. We just cannot wait to her, to see her, to hug her, to do her like Dino do Fred on Flintstone when he see her. We're just going to run to her and knock her over and all that and jump on top of her. But we haven't seen her in quite some time, 3 to 4 years, and just going to be exciting to see her when she come in. Dr. Kennedy, welcome to your show, Real Talk with the number one doctor, the co-host of this show, one of the number one shows across the country, the number one show, not number two, three, or four, but number one show, Real Talk with the number one doctor. Dr. Kennedy, you have the floor.
Well. I am telling you, if I get that kind of greeting, I don't know if I want to go back to Georgia. I mean, Georgia's known for hospitality, food, and so forth, but that kind of hugging and touching and grabbing me and making me feel like I've been missed, I might just really enjoy that. So thank you so much. I'm so pleased to be on the radio show with my listening audience tonight. I tell you, 1 minute our weather is raining, and all the minutes it's shining, and it really does take an effect even on the emotions of individuals. But I am glad tonight to be here and to share some thoughts that I have with our listening audience. And I am also definitely looking forward to traveling at Fresno to our town hall meeting and to really just have some fellowship with our folks. I haven't had a chance to really sit and listen to the Minister Farrakhan on what he was sharing with his listening audience. I hope to do that in the coming hours. But our country is definitely in a transition, let me use that term, tonight. We hear of our young people, lots of lots of programs have been around our young people, and we have in our movement, we're trying to bring more young people into that, and so we are working towards that sort of a thing. Are you able to hear me? I'm getting some kind of feedback.
Hello, Dr. K. I think we have a malfunction here. Give me 1 second. We'll clear the line for you.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, great. So, there's a lot of energy and a lot of effort and a lot of resources that are being put into our younger generation. You know, you can hardly find an organization that takes people that aren't in their 30s. 35 years old today is considered getting on with age. So, you know, those of us that are over 50 and 60, we don't seem to have a place in our society today. And yet we are the ones that really was raised with a sense of understanding what our emotions is and how we can intelligently use our emotions to take us to the next level. We are investing in our young people, and I think that they are not very connected to their emotions. It's as if we're walking around in a fog. And I saw something the other day which I thought was very appropriate. It spelled out fog, F-O-G, and it said F is for feelings. And when we talk about our feelings, what does it mean to each person about their feelings? What does each person feel, or what is each person doing about their feelings? And then the O is for options, and it says, how could you respond to each other in terms of what are your options? What kind of response would you have for each other, or what choices can be made when we talk about options? And then the G would be for our goals. What might we move forward towards? What are our real goals? And in a way, that is how we are today in terms of our emotions. It feels like a fog going around trying to figure out what our feelings are, what our options are, what our goals are. We have got to have a concrete understanding, because there's so much going on in our society today that is tapping into our emotions. And if we don't know how to handle our emotions, we hear so much about black-on-black crime. There is something to be said about black-on-black crime, because that black-on-black crime certainly is dealing with our emotions. And our emotions look very different from white Caucasian emotions. Well, Dr. Kennedy, you're an organizational psychologist. Are you now going to bring racism into this conversation as well? Are our feelings anything to do with our ethnicity? Well, you know what? Our environment teaches us how to respond and how to act. So you have to take into account one's ethnicity, one's emotion, and how we are seen in our emotion. And the title that Reverend Harris so appropriately put on our show this evening, and maybe for the next few evenings, is looking at emotional intelligence. Is that really white privilege? Because I would like to say to you this evening that emotional intelligence looks very different for black people as they do for white people. When we are assimilating into the white privilege culture, and that seems to be the more we act white, whatever that means, but you have heard it before, this is nothing new, but when we are in being rewarded for our assimilation, then we are really responding more on a white pendulum. We're more looking and acting and sounding like our dominant culture. And you get rewarded for that. You know that. Black folks who have made it, whatever that means. Black folks who have arrived, who know how to dance both dances. You know the rewards that are given to you, the fancy titles. You get to live in the nice neighborhoods, not being harassed. Your children get to go to the nicer colleges and schools, and you get to drive the nicer cars and dress the more appropriate ways. You even, your speech even portrays a sense of confidence and have arrived in your behavior. And so, yes, all of those have its place. Shakespeare said, when you're in Rome, you do like what the Romans do. So we're not knocking that, but we're also looking at, with white privilege, with the privilege that you have, whether it's financial privilege, gender privilege, socioeconomic privilege, whatever those privileges are that has attained you another layer, another level to be looked upon, how do you take that privilege and what do you do with that privilege, I think is what we're looking at as we have these conversations. Because at the end of the day, as people of color, we have to try twice as hard to be able to make it into the competitive world in which we live in. We have a president who is biracial, and if you notice, since he's been in office, he's never tapped into, quote-unquote, the white side of him. And for that matter of fact, even his black side, for that matter of fact, is questioned by those who not want him to speak or to represent them. And so he's found very protocol, and he's been very protocol to just be a president and not tap into his sides, his ethnic side. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Only time will tell. When he comes out of that office, he will have many conversations, many conversations, presentations, if we don't do him like we've done Clarence Thomas, that is. I say that with tongue-in-cheek because I'm sure there are some groups, even as we're speaking, that will make sure that he does not have a platform in their community. After all, they have just tried it just the other day to see if it went over when he went into the community that was so stricken with the shooting. It was said that the gun lovers said he is not going to have a platform. He could meet with the families and speak with them, but they did not want to give him a public platform. Not that he needed a public platform, by the way, because his goal was to go to the families and to share with them and to console them for their losses. But already they're trying to try on for size if they can get away with not inviting him into a public forum. And so, again, only time will tell what it felt like to be the first black family in the White House and what they had to do and how they had to respond and how they had to act and present themselves. And only time will tell what those conversations will look like. All of that comes from a place of emotional intelligence, is my point. All of what I'm saying tonight, that president, our president, has had to really be in touch with his own emotional intelligence and know that he had to respond a certain way to one group over another. You know, when we're talking about emotional intelligence, it has a place for our black conversation. It has a place for our civil rights movement. It has a place for identifying ourselves and our looking at what our rights are. When we're talking about emotional intelligence, ladies and gentlemen, and I don't want to make this an academia conversation tonight because I like the interaction. And I think that I will call in a few moments back with Reverend Harris so that we don't make this too intellectual, because I don't want to stamper or steam our emotions of our conversations. But I want to lay a foundation work, because I saw something the other day that I think really appeals and puts us in where we are as black people. But when we're talking about emotional intelligence, we're really talking about self-awareness. How self-aware are we as black people today? Because we cannot keep doing what we're doing, or we're going to get the same results. So where is our self-awareness when we talk about emotional intelligence? What is our self-regulation? How are we regulating ourselves? What is our trustworthiness? How are we consciously connecting ourselves in our own regulating ourselves, our self-gratification, our self-direction? What is our self-regulation? What is our motivation as black brothers and sisters? What is our motivation? I am speaking to us, our people, tonight. How are we motivated? How clear are our goals? How are we moving towards positive attitudes? And how do we know when we are in a negative zone? How do we understand ourselves? That's our empathy. How do we understand ourselves and understand others? and recognize others' feelings and when those behaviors are positive or negative. Our empathy towards one another. These are the things that help to correct our black-on-black crimes, how we treat one another with regards, with respect. And the last area of our social intelligence that makes up our social intelligence is our social skills, our interactions, our interpersonal skills, our empathy, as I said before, how we negotiate with one another, how we look at our global economic power, how we understand how to become resourceful people, persuasive people, how we communicate well. So again, let me summarize the components that goes into our emotional intelligence, I'm talking about black people's emotional intelligence. How do we recognize our own emotional intelligence? You see, the importance of that is if we don't recognize our own emotional intelligence, then we cannot take it to the next step, which for too long we have been operating under post-traumatic stress syndrome. And we have to begin to heal ourselves, ladies and gentlemen. We cannot rely on this culture to heal us. It has not, and it cannot, it does not know how. We have got to understand who we are as a people and whose we are as a people and how we begin to build community back together. So when we're talking about emotional intelligence, the ingredients, the characteristics that goes into that are these five things that I think is important. And we could break them into subcategories, but for the purpose of building this environment for ourselves, building our own environment, we need to be self-aware, we need to have self-regulation, we need to be motivated, we need to have empathy, we need to have social skills. Those areas begin to build for us who we are as people, as our emotional intelligence goes. Maybe a description of emotional intelligence addresses specific components of oneself, including self-awareness, our personal reflections, and the development of our human reaction. It gives us as individuals the ability to read our own environment. My God, we need to know how to read our own environment. And so I've heard people say, well, you know what, our brothers, if they wouldn't run from the police, then they wouldn't shoot them in the back. Have you ever heard that? I have heard that. I am here to tell you tonight, brothers and sisters, that our brothers are running intentionally. They are running for their lives because they know that if they don't run, what is the alternative? The alternative is for the police to beat them down, beat them into a pulp, beat up their bodies with whatever they can, kick them and bruise them. And yes, we may say, well, isn't it better to be beat down and beat up to a pulp? Kick their ribs and their faces and push them into the ground. Isn't that far better than shooting them in the back? And it's a matter of an opinion, because at the end of the day, yes, we all want life and we all want to live to tell the story another day. But their reaction, their innate fight or flight reaction is to run. And of course, when they run, they do get shot in the back. But we need to teach and train our white police officers that you are setting them up for failure. Damn if you do and damn if you don't. If you run for your life, you'll shoot them in the back. If they stand still, you throw them down on the ground and you beat them to a pulp. And so our brothers, it's a no-win situation for our black brothers in the time in which we live. And we need to change that. We need to change that, whether it's through policy, well, whether it's through the conversation that we have. But we as black people do not need to get on our own black people and beat them to a pulp with our words, with our actions either. And so when we look at emotional intelligence, we're looking at how we understand how and why we react. We need to understand what the craft to responding is. And we need to understand that emotional intelligence is not just a professional area, but it is also how we understand and operate and how we operate very wisely in the culture in which we live and amongst each other. If we can begin to get a hand and a hold on that, then I would like to take us to the next level of our conversation, which is, and we won't do that today, because I'd like to leave this open to some conversation, if we can. But I'd like to be able to, and I'm just making sure that I've not dropped the call, because it seems so very, very quiet tonight. And but I'm used to at least an amen. Say it again, sister. Well, sister, I got a question. No, I'm still on the line, so I think Brother Harris has graciously muted the phone so that there's no interruption. What I'd like to do in the next coming days is to then talk about the theme of forgiveness, restorative justice and forgiveness, because I am telling you, we are a people who have been hurt so badly by this community, hurt by this country in such great ways. But we have got to learn to take the bull by the horn. We have got to figure out how to start developing our own forgiveness and our own reconciliation so that we can be a healing nation again, so that we as Black people can begin to heal ourselves. Brothers and sisters, if we do not understand the power of forgiveness and reconciliation, even Mandela spoke about that. He recognized that the brutality that was taking place in South Africa created such a hurt and such a pain that he himself talked about the forgiveness, the road to forgiveness and reconciliation. I'm actually going to do a presentation this Friday at Georgia State University, and I want to be able to tie that in. There's a deep conversation going on about the reconciliation, particularly with the mass shooting that took place in Charleston just recently in South Carolina, when that white young boy came into the church and shot all those people. And yet we still have to talk about how do we reconcile. You know, there are some questions that come to mind when we are talking about that. But again, we cannot get to this place before first dealing with our emotional intelligence. Understand, you can't put the shoes before the feet into the shoes, but we need the shoes to carry the feet. Do you understand me? And so these two things go together hand in hand. And so as I'm talking about emotional intelligence, we have to also begin to prepare ourselves for the forgiveness and the reconciliation. And there are some questions that comes up and questions that I will be addressing this Friday in the conference and as I look at their layout. And those questions exist around forgiveness and reconciliation. For example, can we really forgive those who have harmed us? Oh, my God. Can we really forgive those who have harmed us? You know, you can't do it of yourself. That is a spiritual conversation, even within itself. But listen to me. Don't let us underestimate our Black people. For we are spiritual people. We could not have made it through slavery if it was not for the spiritualness that kept us through that slavery to give us our emancipation to where we could vote, to where we can have the lifestyles we have today. So understand that we're not asking for anything out of the ordinary. We are forgiving people. We are people who are self-aware. We are people who understand fullness. We do understand interpersonal and intrapersonal connectiveness. And so we'll talk a little bit more about the position of forgiveness and if it is possible to forgive even those today that have developed policies that hurt Black people and Black men in particular. And our jail system, we have to come to a reconciliation of what we need to do to change those policies, but also present love. That is the reason why when we end our shows every night, we talk about love. Bob Marley says one love, and he himself understood what it meant to have one love. We have got to do the work that we do in the spirit of love. So I want to stop there for tonight and invite Reverend Harris to come back in to see if there's anything that I've said this evening. It's very rich information. Again, using the foundation of emotional intelligence and then building from emotional intelligence the second layer to our existence, which will be reconciliation, forgiveness, and reconciliation. And then that will provide us the third layer, and we will talk about that third layer as we go along. Reverend Harris is Reverend Harris for who he is. He does not come on the show just to be a Dr. Harris. And I don't come on the show just to be a Dr. Kennedy. But there is a spiritual side to the work that we do, so that when we hear of the shooting and the brutal and the inhumane ways that we are treated in this country, and particularly towards our Black men and sisters, there's a conversation that you and I have got to have. We've got to be able to be much more appropriate to our Black men. They cannot go out into the community and get a beat down, and then they come home and they get a beat down through our words and through our actions. But hurt people, and this is a time for healing. This is why the minister brought people to Washington, D.C. this week. A million, thousands of people that came there so that he could speak into their spirit man. That is why the reason we have this show, so we can speak into the spirit of our men, to build up your most holy spirit, your spirit, because it's your spirit that we need. The system that we live in is designed to break our spirit. And so all that we have to cherish and protect is our spirit. And so there's a third layer of what we need to do. If we begin to have these conversations, we'll begin to get out of this post-traumatic slave syndrome stress and move us into the place where we can behold people so that we can provide a legacy for our children, our black children who are coming into this world. So, Reverend Harris, let me stop there and let me invite you back into the conversation this evening. I hope you're there. Hope you can bring yourself back in and let us have this conversation so that I don't have to go too deep more into this. I'm just breaking the surface tonight. Are you there, my brother?
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. You have Dr. Jean Kennedy. Dr. Jean Kennedy out of Atlanta, Georgia, where her roots is from the West Coast. We thank her for the information that she just gave us. It was very rich and very inspiring. I had someone hit me on Facebook last night, Dr. Kennedy, who said they really love to hear you speak. So we do have followers. We do have folks who are tuning in to our radio show all over across the country. So we are making a difference. We may not make a big difference, but we're making a difference. That's all that matters, as long as you're making a difference. And I think that by Dr. Kennedy able to be an organizational psychologist, able to dissect organizations, able to be able to look at certain situations and to be able to study it and be able to ask the hard questions, make people do critical thinking. That is something that we don't do today. I think that was something that happened in slavery, that the slave master didn't want us to think, they wanted to think for us. So I think today in 2015, we have to be a people who have to be transparent. We have to be a people who want to either be part of the solution or part of the problem. And I believe that real talk with the number one doctors, we want to be part of the solution, but dissect the problem, operate on the problem, and see where we come up with. And so I think, Dr. Kennedy, that what you said today was very vital. I think what you said today is making people think. You know, many people don't believe in Mr. Farrakhan. You know, they say, well, you know, he don't believe in Jesus. He don't believe in this. He don't believe in that. Okay, well, whatever you agree with them on, stick with that and run with it so that we can build capacity, so we can build understanding, so that we can build for the next seven generations for our children. Because at the end of the day, it's not about me, Dr. Kennedy. At the end of the day, it's not about you, Dr. Kennedy. At the end of the day, it's about the next seven generations of our children who do not have a platform, who do not have a floor to walk on, who do not have a base that they can be able to stand on and understand, why am I in the condition that I'm in? And I think that the radio show brings another element to the country. This radio show, Real Talk with the Number One Doctors, brings more substance. The Bible says when the salt loses its savior, what good is it? Yes. So we want to be a radio show of substance. We want to be a radio show, and not just a radio show, but we want to have – I look at the radio show as a ministry. Everything I do is a ministry. No matter if I'm out in the field farming, it's a ministry. No matter if I'm cutting the grass, it's a ministry. Because everything has life. And so we have to understand, Dr. Kennedy, that when you break these systemic institutions down, that we make people think. I mean, I don't want someone to always agree with me on everything. Because if you agree with me, then you're just a yes person. I don't want a yes person around me. I want someone who's going to think around me. And so, Dr. Kennedy, I think you brought up a lot of good valid points this evening. I don't know where we're at with the clock right now. Probably at about 5 minutes before the half-minute mark before we go off the show. But we just want to thank those who tune in on the Internet. You know, tell a friend. You know, we're going six, almost 7 days a week now. We have a show on Sunday nights where we come in and getting ready for the week to empower people. So listen to what Dr. Kennedy has to say. Because believe me, it will help you in your life. So I want to thank those who's tuning in for the radio show on the internet. Those who are on the line, please don't hang up. Dr. Kennedy, you spoke about hurt people, and I want to kind of jump back into that, not to go too deep, but I think that's something that I used to say that a lot, and I didn't quite understand what you were saying when you were saying it. But you said hurt people. Why would someone that's hurt want to hurt someone else if they're hurting? I thought if you're hurt, that's a pain that you don't want to see someone else go in. But it seemed like today in 2015 that people who are hurt want to deliberately go out and hurt someone else because they are hurt. Can you kind of dialogue about that a little bit more, Dr. Kennedy?
Yes, that's very good. That's a very good place to go, Reverend Harris. I tell you, we have such synergy. We really do. We're so good for one another on this show. You bring up a vital part. You see, we are focusing this conversation around the concept of, well, why is that black folks be shooting one another and hurting one another? We hear that. Well, when we talk about the empowerment and we talk about the brutality of the police department and we talk about how they're gunning down our people, there is always a segment of our black people who will always say, and the white man, I wait for you to say it, because he's trained you to think a certain way, to speak a certain way. And we're trying to address that through this concept of emotional intelligence and through the concept and the fundamental thought processes about forgiveness and reconciliation. Hurt people. And so no wonder you have black-on-black crime. No wonder our brothers are shooting one another. No wonder they are going into neighborhoods and hurting one another. No wonder. It is because they are hurt people. They live in projects. They see their parents working so hard, going to school maybe, sacrificing, getting those student loans, trying to get the right major, and preparing themselves and packaging themselves, trying to get a job, trying to get out of the welfare cycle, trying to make sure they can find a good man, a good woman in their life who will respect them and regard them for the hard work they do, trying to follow the rules, trying to live by the policies and procedures that are put out there, trying to do right by themselves and by their families, only to be in a cycle that will never let them out. They trust the attorneys when they go to the judiciary system. They're told they need to take a plea bargain. And when they take a plea bargain, they find that maybe they should have stood up and allowed the jury to listen to their case instead of being railroaded down the road. Attorneys are going to make their money one way or the other. Let me go there, huh? They're going to make their money. If they tell you sign the dotted line because they're going to get 25% of the settlement or they're going to get 30% of the settlement, it don't matter if you get a dollar on that settlement. That attorney will walk away with his money. He's not going to lose out. He does not lose. If anything, he gains, because if he can put a feather in his cap to say that he represented you, it just makes for good business. So we are always finding ourselves being hurt. So hurt people. That is an important factor that we must take into account. And so when you are with a person who just seems to be giving you disregard, disrespect, you have to look into peeling the onion off of that person. What is the layer? What is the deep layer in factor for this person? They come out scratching and screaming and hollering and shouting and very violent towards one another. What is causing that? Where is that behavior learned? It is a learning behavior. It is a coping mechanism. Nonetheless, it is because hurt people. And so we can go into this some more, Reverend Harris, but I'm glad you brought that up. What are your thoughts on this, Reverend Harris? You as a pastor, my God, I know you've got to see some hurt people coming in, asking for counseling, asking you to help intervention, give them intervention for where they're at. Give us some of your thoughts. Maybe you have some more insight from where I'm coming. But that's my thought process, that hurt people because they need help. It's their way of crying out for help.
Well, there you are, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Jean Kennedy, once again, throwing it down real strong with the knowledge in Atlanta, in the South, where Dr. King originated from. And so I think, Dr. Kennedy, from my perspective, I think that we are, I'm seeing a lot of folk who are suicidal. I'm seeing a lot of folk who, I may say, don't know. Well, let me put it, let me just keep it real. I think we got a bunch of zombies walking around. I think we have people that look like they're normal and they're not normal. I think that we have people who's faking it to make it. I think that we have people who think they middle class, don't understand that they're the underclass. I think we have, I see people who just trying to play the game but don't know how to play the game. And so, you know, when you do that and you're not being real and true to who you are and what your purpose is in life, you're going to get caught up in the rat trap. And I think that's one thing about, you know, this radio show. We keep it real. We call a spade, we call it a heart, a joker, because I think that at the end of the day, you want the truth. And sometimes the truth hurts. Sometimes the truth, people don't want to hear the truth. But I think that right now we've done a poor job in giving the correct information out, because let's face it, Doc, I mean, look at parenting today. Parenting today is about being friends with your children. Being parenting today is all about being partners with your son. No, we have to be parents and understand that the enemy, that the system is out to kill them. We have to understand that this system that is in place, our babies' bodies are worth $100,000 a year to the prison industry complex. $100,000 a year plus that little brown, black body, white body, whatever you want to call it, is worth $100,000+ a year to the prison industry across the world. Now, we have to look at that. Who profits from that? Listen, Dr. Kennedy, I'm going to bring this up to you. There's a police department here in the United States. The chief of police decided, he said, look, you know, he said, we spend all our money, you know, going out, you know, chasing people, who has drug issues. You know what they did, Dr. Kennedy? You know what this police chief did? And I got to give this police chief his roses. Because, see, people call me anti-police. I'm not anti-police. I'm anti, you know, when you do wrong, we're going to call it out. But this chief of police, Dr. Kennedy, said that I am not going to arrest nobody else in this city or this county who has drug addiction. He said, I am going to open our door. He said, I'm going to open our door. And I'm going to help them. This is the chief of police saying this. He said, I'm not going to go out and waste no more money chasing people and throwing them in jail and throwing them in prison. He said, we're going to have an open door policy. If they won't help, all they got to do is walk in the police department and we're not going to arrest them. That's to me, that's what America's supposed to be about. It's to empower people and to help people. This is a police chief doing this.
Chief Dyer, you talk about Chief Jerry Dyer, the one that he has so many things that he doesn't do right that he actually has seen an opportunity to do right, saying that this police department, if you are a drug addict, you're a drug user, and you are wanting help, sincere help, just like how we have safe places for children who run away, they can go to a fire department and they will not be turning to see people. So you can go to certain gas stations and if you see that sign, safe, safe place. They can go in there and they will not be turned over to authorities or be charged. You are telling me that your Chief Dyer, who has a lot of things that he doesn't do right, has hit something, has come across something that says, if you need help as a drug addict, I will be willing to walk into my police department. You will not be arrested. I will get you the help I need. Is that what you're telling me, Reverend Harris?
Well, I said it was a chief of police. I didn't say it was Chief Dyer, because I don't think the Chief Dyer has the kind of heart to be able to help poor people here in this community. But you know what, Dr. Kidd, I'm going to hook up with this chief of police. I got to find out what state and city it is, and I'm going to write him a letter and thank this brother for not going out arresting our people, taking a taxpayer's money.
And so now he is showing that there's a benchmark. If one police chief can do that, and I was being facetious when I called Dyer's name because I wanted to really call it out. Now Dyer has an example, and many other police chiefs has an example. If one police chief is willing to say, I am willing to change my policy, and I'm willing to do restorative justice. Hallelujah. That is what that is. That is restorative justice. Boy, I feel like I'm in church right now. And so if that, wherever he is, may God bless him for being a forger to go in a direction. It's not a popular direction, but if he's willing to say, I will not arrest if you walk into my police department and say you need help and you're genuine about that. I say he is setting the benchmark for other police chiefs to do that. It's not a popular way to go, but it certainly is a restorative justice way to go, because we spend too much money locking people up and throwing away the key. And there is good in everybody. There is good in even Manson has some good in him, because his attitude and his way of life and his lifestyle has helped us to understand cultish behavior. It has helped us to understand what these underground behaviors are. So there is good in a person if we will dig deep and find out where that is. We just don't have the time, and we just don't have the resources, and we don't want to do it. But that's why hurt people hurt people. I am so pleased to hear this development. And I say hotep to whoever that police chief is.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Kennedy out of Atlanta, Georgia. Not sure how much time we have left on the dial here. But we're going to go all the way up to the end. We're going to make sure that we give you a quality show. That's what this is about. I'm just so excited that this chief of police came
4 minutes
with a different spin on community policing. He said point blank, he said, I am not going to arrest nobody else in this city. He said, Dr. Kennedy, let me tell you something that I hope you're sitting down and got your seatbelt on. They interviewed a white brother who is from California, who left California to go get rehab help in this city. And the news reporter said, you're not even from here. You're from California. So it goes to show you that we have to dissect these institutions. We have to dissect and have a real conversation. Listen, let me just put it out there. If I run for the mayor of Fresno, that's going to be my platform right there. You're not arresting no more drug users. We can't have him for a mayor. Why not? Because the way you all been doing it ever since 400 years of slavery ain't working. So we need something new now. So that would be my platform. I'm just putting it out there right now. I'm not arresting no more drug users. We're going to open the door. They're going to come in the police department, and we're going to have social workers, resources, mental health that they help them. We're not going to waste a tax dollar anymore throwing people in prison for job security, for prisons, industry, probation officers. No, you want some more money, you'll get a part-time job or go into another profession. That's my platform for running for mayor 2018.
Well, you're making an announcement here. Look like you're not going to have to talk off the air, Reverend Harris, about this development. But it's a good place. It's a good platform to run, because you know what? The money is there. You see, we put too much money on crime. In this country, crime pays. We need to change that paradigm, and let us begin to say crime does not pay. Crime does not pay. It is life. We want life over death. Life over death. People should not be so disposable. People are your most valuable commodity that you have. When God created man, he says, this is good. Even God has to put his handiwork and said, man, I did something here when I created man. And so we must value one another. And we must value, when we begin to value one another, value ourselves, we will cut back on the black-on-black crime. This has been a wonderful show. This is Dr. Gene Kennedy, and we are looking forward to you coming back in and listening to what we have to say. We're available for you to invite us to go to your places and be guest speakers. And again, just follow us on Facebook. Reverend Harris, have the last few seconds.
Bob Marley says, what, Dr. Kennedy?
One love. One love.
6 seconds.
One love. We say goodnight.
We cannot do the work we do if we don't have love. It's love. It takes love for us to love one another. And so Bob Marley says, one love. Peace and love for both of us.
Are we still here?
All right. we'll just roll it down so when it cuts us off.